Hare Krishna. Thank you for a real overwhelming response, and I'm continuing on with experiences in Krishna consciousness. And maybe I'll just clarify briefly why it is that I'm not calling it a autobiography or my diary. Firstly, I have no diary. I've not recorded this in any form other than just a brief summary while I was in Kazakhstan. And the second is that I try to, at least that was the idea, to avoid just talking about myself, but rather I just wanted to share experiences which would be common to devotees and show devotees how I dealt with certain experiences which they would also come across in Krishna consciousness, and that perhaps that would also help them in dealing with those, or at least seeing an example of how I dealt with them, or sometimes how I didn't deal with them. Anyway, I'll continue. I just came back from a little boating expedition. Actually, early in the morning, a hurricane swept through here. By that I mean a real hurricane that tore down trees, and as I mentioned, I'm in a boathouse, so it really rocked the boathouse, pulled down the main power lines. It's a good thing that we have a generator here that keeps the cottages powered with electricity, and it was chopping up huge, huge waves. And today it's been cloudy all day, but I went with my cousins Robert and Peter. Peter's another, he's a movie producer. He came up for the Jewish New Year from Los Angeles, and we went over in boats, each one their own, to this island just a few hundred yards off the mainland here. That's also part of the property. And there we went cliff climbing, so it was something good to warm me up and a little outing from being cooped up between these buildings, the boathouse and the main building up on the hill. Last night I finished off with Vishwakarma Prabhu shaving me up, and that was the culmination of the surrendering process. Certainly it wasn't the end of my surrender, but it really brought me to a stage where I came to Krishna and said, all right, now I belong to you, I'm yours. And whereas that took place back in 1973, so 33 years ago, and that surrendering process is still going on, but we see that we go through very major stages of surrender from year to year. I mark five-year periods where I see Krishna arranges extraordinary circumstances where I'm required to make quantum leaps in terms of surrender. And I see the same taking place in others' devotees' lives. And of course, this was the first real major step. Did I really understand what Krishna consciousness was all about? That Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I was his eternal servant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to spread Krishna consciousness. Here was a fledgling religious movement in which Srila Prabhupada was personally spearheading to distribute books and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Was I going to just stand by and be a passive observer, or was I going to do something about it? And I decided that, yes, I didn't want to be a engineer. I wanted to be someone who would give Krishna consciousness to others. I wanted to be a sannyasi. And thus, I moved into the temple and began to live in the close association of Vaishnavas, which was something that wasn't anything that I'd ever done before. I was a single child. I had my own room in the house when I lived with my parents. I was spoiled. I could say spoiled rotten, but I'll just say I was spoiled. when I got married, we had good facilities, and here it was, all of a sudden I was not living with another one person, another few people, but there were at least 30 of us, and we were living in a bowling alley, and this bowling alley had partitions which didn't quite reach the ceiling. They were about 6 feet high, or maybe a little over our heads. And there was one area for the brahmacharis, there was another area for the brahmacharinis, there was the temple room, and there was one small room which the temple president, his wife, and his baby, Gopinath, stayed in. And all of a sudden I was living with 25 people. There was no bed, we were sleeping on the floor, and I compensated by making a place amongst the books. Our book warehouse was also in the Brahmachari ashram. So I built a little cave out of the books, and I put my sleeping bag in there, and whatever few possessions I brought, I didn't really bring very much with me when I joined the temple. And I moved in with other devotees and very quickly learned to rise early, because just the idea of having to interact with so many others also had the practical ramification that we only had one bathroom. There was one toilet in there, and there was one shower and one sink. And first the Matajis used it, I think it was from 2:30 to 3:30, and then the men used it from 3:30 till Mangalarti time, in order to avoid standing in line, which after one day I knew this wasn't for me. I got used to the idea that if I really wanted my free time in the bathroom, then I had to get up before the Matajis. So that was my practice, getting up at 2:15 in the morning, running into the bathroom and getting out before the Matajis time. And that gave me opportunity to read Srila Prabhupada books, chant my japa. Guru Mishloka Prabhu was the temple president. As I mentioned, he was a wonderful devotee, and Vishwakarma was his best friend from pre-devotional days. He was the vice president. They were a very dynamic duo. Vishwakarma was in charge of the kitchen, as I remember right, and he was also in charge of Sankirtan. And I moved in the afternoon. I got shaved up. I got nicely received by the devotees. And next morning, after the morning program, I sat down to do what I usually did when here I was being given an instruction that, yes, you should go out on book distribution. And so I did. Gokulananda Prabhu was a very jolly devotee. He had a lot to do with my joining. He preached to me on a regular basis when I was there. In fact, he was the devotee who preached to me more than anyone else. And now he took me out on Sankirtan, taught me how to distribute books. And I remember the first day or two, it was somewhat difficult. But around the third day, selling back to Godheads on a street corner, I started to taste the real nectar of book distribution. And that was such an overwhelming sensation. Well, I don't have to tell those devotees who distribute books. I was in ecstasy, running around from person to person, getting them to buy the magazines. And that was also the first day that we got arrested. There was one policeman who particularly had it in for us, and he took us in, and he arrested us, kept us in jail for the day, and then let us go. That happened a few times, so we started playing hide-and-seek. But it was worth it, because when we weren't in jail, then we were distributing books, and distributing books was such a wonderful experience that all of a sudden my selfish mentality, which made it difficult for me to live at such close quarters with others, started to melt, knowing the benefits of sharing Sankirtan stories with devotees, getting inspiration from others, and seeing that I was actually part of a Sankirtan army, which was giving Krishna consciousness to others. I wasn't living in a commune. We weren't just some kind of big happy-go family chanting Hare Krishna, but we were an army. And Srila Prabhupada's letters, which were usually on the bulletin board, they confirmed this, that we were meant to just go out. In fact, this very famous letter arrived at that time when Prabhupada says that the temples are just a base where devotees go out and distribute books, just like in the war, they drop bombs on the opposing enemy. And this type of inspiration that I received from book distribution helped me adjust to the team spirit, or got me into the team spirit, and that team spirit helped me adjust to the fact that I was no longer my own man in my own room or in my own apartment or just sharing it with another person, but that I had to share with others, and that I had to compromise my lifestyle, my bathroom habits, my eating habits, so many other things to fit in with others. In other words, that the whole became more important than the parts. And for me, that was a very important realization, that a realization that I repeat very often to the present day, that the institution, the society, the temple is more important than the individual. And I think this is one very important factor that distinguishes devotees who give themselves to spread the mission of Krishna consciousness, is that they accept this fact that the institution is first and the individual is second. So I was living in great happiness, enjoying morning programs, kirtan, the association of devotees. I remember there was one devotee who had just joined. Many devotees joined over a period of this 6 months, few months before, few months after. Keshi Shatru Prabhu, who was a musician, reggae musician, he joined a few days after me. There was another Pragosh, who's neither the book distributor Pragosh Prabhupada disciple or the Irish devotee Pragosh GBC. This is another Pragosh, French Canadian devotee. He joined at the same time. There's about a dozen devotees who joined in that period of, yes, I think 6 months. And it was very enthusiastic, dynamic. We were taking over the world. It was just a matter of, well, if it wasn't a few days, but at least it would be a matter of a few months or a few years. A few times my wife came back. Interestingly enough, every time she came, she brought a tray of Simply Wonderfuls, which was really my weak point. And I knew that I was making some advancement when I gave all the Simply Wonderfuls to the devotees without even touching one. And first she was telling me that she wanted to join, and I was still quite adamant that if she did, she should join somewhere else. And there were some other natural feminine means by which she tried to distract me, but I became just more determined, and ultimately I told her not to come back. And she didn't until, I think, 1976 or 75, once we had already moved to Pinerf about 3 years later. Although I remember once, while distributing books at the airport, and we used to do that incognito, wearing wigs, while distributing books, I just sort of turned a corner and all of a sudden bumped into her and my father-in-law. But that was the only other experience at this time that I had with my ex-wife. And the Association of Devotees also helped me study books. I saw some devotees who were just absorbed in service, and I saw the devotees who were very studious. In fact, at that time, the temple president was very, very good in encouraging us to read and study. We would regularly be memorizing shlokas. In fact, there would be choice shlokas that devotees would have to memorize prior to the Bhagavatam class, and we would repeat these verses. I think every 3 days or so, we moved on to another verse. I remember being told that I should ask for initiation, and I also remember sitting before the window, writing on a small desk just by the front entrance, and writing a letter to Srila Prabhupada asking for initiation. That was, you could say, my first real contact with Srila Prabhupada, my first direct communication with him, because up to now I had not seen Srila Prabhupada directly. I had only seen him through his books and through his representatives. And we held our temple president or GBC in very high esteem. And I don't even know when it was that we got initiated. As I mentioned, end of April, I think must have been sometime in June, that there was the first initiation, and a few months later, second initiation. That's how things went at that time. And with all of these things, the association of Vaishnavas became not only something that I learned to adjust to, but something which was indispensable, something that was really part of my life and something that was the basis of my advancement in Krishna consciousness. Hearing, chanting, sankirtan, protection from the material energy, personal interaction, I realized that all of these things were the benefit from that close association. And in a matter of a few months, it became very, very natural. After about a year in Krishna consciousness, my sort of happy-go-lucky days came to an end, and I was obliged to start taking responsibility for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said that when Krishna recognizes someone, when he recognizes their service, then he gives them more service and he gives them responsibility. This wasn't exactly the type of responsibility I wanted. Uttama Shloka asked me to take charge of the spiritual sky incense sales. They were doing this very successfully in Toronto, manufacturing incense there and selling it. So he wanted me to do it in Montreal, Quebec, and the Maritime provinces. I was very, very happy as a Sankirtan devotee. And for me, that was the only thing that I wanted to do. I used to, by this time, go out alone on the street, distribute all kinds of books, particularly sets of Krishna books, and I couldn't think of a more ecstatic, blissful service and better life than doing that. Even in the winter time, when it was very cold, there were tunnels and passageways that led from the CN train station to Place Bonaventure, which was a downtown shopping center, and other shopping centers one after the other. So we didn't even really have to go outside in the wintertime. We could distribute inside, but because there were always security guards, we would constantly have to move from one place to another. Anyway, my surrender was to accept the role of an incense salesman, and so I became, used my karma name, I became Peter Latai from Spiritual Sky, and sold incense, shampoos, essential oils, soaps in many of the head shops, hippie shops, and other stores that specialized in these type of items, and also went further afield, you could say, on traveling Sankirtan. Just around this time, Uddhamashloka and Vishwakarma went to Toronto to take responsibility there, and then Shripati and Urvasi, who were actually in Montreal in 72-73, came to take charge of the temple. And that was another adjustment that I had to make, that the devotees who I had so much affection for, who I was so indebted for bringing me to Krishna consciousness, whose style I'd gotten used to, now had gone somewhere else, and now I had to get used to someone else who did things differently, spoke differently, and who I didn't have the same type of personal relationship. And that person, that temple president, all of a sudden started looking up on me as a senior devotee, as someone to actually help him, because more or less at that time, the incense sales financed the whole temple. And not only was I expected to help with maintaining the temple, but we also started looking for other temples. We had to get out of the bowling alley because the landlord wanted us to leave. And in the interim period, we moved into a beauty salon just down the street. Yes, that was very interesting. And I think we stayed there for a year. And then finally, we actually found one very beautiful place, one extraordinary place, which was on Mountain Street, very, very prestigious place, right downtown. It was a large, beautiful townhouse. However, they didn't want to sell to us because we were Hare Krishnas. So our lawyer took the owners to court. In the meantime, we were still without a place, so we had to keep looking for another place. And we found another place which was out of downtown. It was on Pinef. It was a old church which was owned by a religious organization, and we bought that. And just as we were about to sign that contract, news came that we could actually get the other place. But because we'd gone so far down the road with this place, we purchased this place on Pinef. That was a mistake. Unfortunately, it was a strategical mistake. That part of Montreal has not developed even to this day. And the two places were just so vastly different in terms of their appearance, in terms of the prestige value, in terms of the preaching potential. Anyhow, but that's a thing of the past. And so Lord Jagannath and Gaur Nithai moved to this new temple, and I was responsible for helping to find it and then for plans for renovating it. In fact, I sawed a hole in the roof, which leaks to this very day, I'm told, and built a Tulsi greenhouse over there and put Tulsi Devi up there, as well as make the temple presentable so that when Srila Prabhupada arrived there in 1976, he actually saw our, excuse me, that was 1975, he actually saw our temple. While we were still in the beauty salon, or ex-beauty salon, Srila Prabhupada took sick. And that was our first experience of Srila Prabhupada's illness, and the devotees were asked to chant 24 hours a day. I still had not met Srila Prabhupada by this time. And yet the responsibility as a disciple became more and more apparent, in that we were asked to chant Hare Krishna for Srila Prabhupada's welfare. Generally at that time, and even up until Srila Prabhupada's departure, many devotees' mood or mentality was that Srila Prabhupada was a transcendental personality who didn't need us, who, in the sense that he wasn't dependent upon our prayers or our 24-hour kirtan. He was beyond the limitations of his almost 80-year-old body, In other words, Srila Prabhupada could do anything. And now I also realize that aside from taking responsibility for maintaining a temple, for looking for a temple, for caring for devotees, that I had a responsibility towards the well-being of my spiritual master. And particularly, I think this 24-hour kirtan went on for about 2 weeks before Srila Prabhupada got better, and then we stopped. And as we did this 24-hour kirtan, it became more and more apparent to me that here was another responsibility for Krishna that I had to take, a responsibility for the welfare of my spiritual master. So these were the two topics that I experiences that I wanted to talk about today, adjusting to living in the close association of devotees and seeing the association of Vaishnavas as a necessity and accepting responsibility as Krishna gave it with the passage of time. Tomorrow I'll finish part one by talking about the first vow that I took, which was to always stay in the mood of Sankirtan or book distribution.